Sci-fi. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Life Sci-Fi with Wade and Willie. I'm Wade.
I'm Willie.
This is a Starburns Audio produced podcast. One believer, one skeptic, and one guest. This episode is produced by our Patreon, Bobby Lawrence Whitmore. Thank you so much, Bobby, for becoming a Patreon. Willie, what are you drinking in honor of Bobby?
I got a fat tire here.
Thank you. Casadores Tequila Reposado and LaCroix. Thanks for the drink, Bobby.
Signature.
If you want to. Sorry. What? What's your
signature seltzer water? Grapefruit.
Safeway Select or what's signature?
It's the Costco brand.
Okay. Kirkland offshoot.
Yeah.
If you want to be like Bobby, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. We've got a bunch of tiers. You can get 2 bonus episodes a week. And if you want to support us, but not monetarily, just go on to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review, and we'll read it on the air. Apparently that helps. I don't know. That's what they say. Smash that like button and retweet and all the dumb fucking internet things. Do all that shit. And apparently it helps us. I've seen no evidence of any of that. Why don't we welcome aboard the SS RLSF, our good friend, returning guest, Aaron Alberstein.
Hey, everybody. What's going on, dude?
What's up?
Good to see you.
How are you?
I'm good.
Are you good? What's been happening? You're an actor.
I have acted before. I'm in college now.
Oh, you're in college?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. What are you studying?
Well, I'm in my sophomore year, so it's just general ed stuff. I got straight A's last semester for the first time since third grade.
Oh, I'll give you $5 for every A, $3 for every B, and I don't pay for C's.
Are you going to do that with your kids?
Sure. It motivated me.
First of all,
I'm not going to have kids, but yeah. My theoretical kids, I'll pay for their grades.
I think in 2021, you have to offer a kid like $2,000 for an A.
Well, fuck that. Then my kid's just going to have to survive on his wits.
That's pretty radical.
But wait, so you went back to college or did you go to college for the first time? Were you in college and it didn't take?
Dude, I started going to college when I was 16, when I was living on my own, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to figure out how to support myself and also study enough. And
gosh, that's so cool. You went to college at 16.
I graduated high school early at the end of my sophomore year. I took a test.
Were you like emancipated or something? What is the story?
I mean, it's a long story. And I just started dating again, so I've had to tell this story a few times to different women. It's kind of sad.
Treat this like a first date.
Yeah, my dad kicked me out of the house when I was 16. It was like it was the day after my last day of school. But he didn't. I didn't get emancipated. No.
Were you like a bad kid or what? Why did he do that?
I mean, I wasn't a perfect kid, but you know, when I
graduated early.
Yeah, when I explain to people what I did to deserve that, they are like surprised. But I don't want to get into it too much because, you know, I've forgiven my dad about it and I don't need to roast him on the record.
Yeah, right. I know.
Okay.
I will say this one of the times I was a bad kid was a year prior to that, at the end of my freshman year. I dropped acid for the first time and I had a huge freak out. And had to have my dad talk me down, and he did it like a pro. He did it like he did it every, like it was something he does every day. He was so chill about it. And then I was grounded obviously after that.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like not that bad.
I mean, I also called a phone sex line at one point in my high school days and thought that it wouldn't show up on the phone bill.
So like for a kid who took a test to graduate at 16, you were kind of stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never had a utility before, so I thought for sure this this particular one doesn't show up. It was an 800 number.
Oh, weird. It was like one of those con ones.
I guess it's, yeah. I was like Adam Sandler in that movie, Punch Drunk Love.
So wait, what city?
Visalia, California. It's right between Fresno and Bakersfield.
Okay. So it's like, it's warm. You're not like in the Rockies or something freezing.
No, it's a desert climate wise. And yeah, it gets hot as hell in the summer.
Like so you're going back to school. What are you studying? I know that like now it's general, but like what's your goal?
Well, goal is UCLA Film School.
Uh-huh.
I want to study screenwriting and directing.
Nice.
So what's your undergrad going to be?
I don't understand what you're saying. What's my minor going to be?
Oh, wait. So they have an undergrad film program?
Yeah, they have you can get a bachelor's. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I only knew about the grad program. I didn't know they had an undergrad.
Yeah, they have a grad program, and like they also have like another program that is supposedly exactly the same as their master's program, except there's no degree.
Yeah, the certificate. I took it.
Yeah, I heard that unless you want to teach film, you should just take that one.
It's it was good. I learned a lot. This was when I was like 24 or something like that. But yeah, it's the same. It's the same teachers. It's just like during night hours or whatever.
Were you a media studies major in college? Fun.
I was a journalism major, and so it was television and news production, or television and video production, or something like that. So it was like learning cameras and editing and like all of that stuff.
So really rudimentary technical stuff.
Yeah. And then there was like a screenwriting course that I took, but it was like an elective. It didn't count.
Right. Got it.
And we had a department there. We could like use their equipment and stuff. You know, it was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I graduated and I applied to UCLA and USC and AFI. And I got an interview for AFI, but they said I was too young because all of their students are like 30 or something like that.
They're like working professionals, right? People who have already been doing it.
It's yeah, I guess so. They just have an older grad program for some reason. And then that's how I found out about the certificate program and ended up, I took it twice actually, just for fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend who's, I think maybe she's in the middle of it. But yeah, it looks fun. It's three semesters, right?
That might be a different one. I think the one that I took was just one semester, but I took it twice, non-sequentially, or whatever the word is.
Cool.
But it was like $1,200. But this is also 20 years ago.
Right. Yeah, I think it's not a whole lot more than that, but it's definitely less than the tuition for the master's or the doctorate program.
Yeah, I feel like that. I don't know. I mean, like when you go to a grad program, you're basically just paying for connections and hoping that like some of these students will get jobs and hire you.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that seems to be what everyone I know who went to film school says, is that they came out of it with connections. And but you know, a lot of those people are like, I came out with like one friend that I work with now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the same with me. I have one friend that I still sort of almost keep in touch with, and none of the others.
Who is that?
Her name is Susan. She's a writer for, like The Tick and various other things.
Oh, cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I think there's also just there's a skill set that I'm not going to pick up unless I learn it formally.
Yeah, well, it can't hurt, right?
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So are you doing that online or how does it work?
No. So I'm going to finish my sophomore year this semester, and then I'm going to take next year off because I don't want to pay university tuition for Zoom classes.
Yeah.
Especially like the upper division film classes there's going to be plenty of lecturing and watching films and then listening to lectures about it. But there's also a lot of hands-on stuff that I want to wait until things are open back up. So I figure fall of 22, things should be back to open.
Yeah, hopefully. Cross your fingers.
Right.
Okay, well, you've been on the show before, but I don't remember your WoW scale score. Do you, or do you want to retake it?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was on a scale of 5 or 7, but I think that I was kind of right in the middle, but you, Wade, thought that I was more towards Willy.
All right, well, let's redo it. It's never been
sure
from 7. It's been from either 10 or 5. You probably took the 5 version.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready to... Oh, for those listening, if you don't know, the WoW scale stands for Waiter Willy. It's a 5-question quiz, and at the end, we'll give our guest Aaron a score anywhere between 0 and 5. If he is more of a 5, he's more of a Willy. If he's more of a 0, he's more of a Wade. Aaron Alberstein, are you ready to get weighed on the WoW scale?
Yes, weigh me, Wade.
WoW scale.
Are you a Wade or are you a Willy?
First question, 3-parter. Do you believe in aliens? If so, have they visited Earth? If so, have they visited Earth in the last 300 years?
I don't think we have concrete evidence of any of those 3 things. However, I think that it's possible.
Possible to all? Yes to all.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Yes to all.
Okay. Sometimes I ask what your idea of an alien is. Like, what does it look like? Is it humanoid?
You mean with like 4 limbs and a head, 2 eyes?
Yeah.
That kind of. No, I don't think aliens look like the grays or like the aliens shaped like that, like we see depicted in a lot of let's call it literature. I just don't think that you would travel light years with that body.
Do you have an idea of what it would be, or is it just abstract to you?
Some kind of glob or blob or energy, some kind of liquid, some kind of goo with some sort of intelligence pulsating through it that's navigating through space in some sort of hard craft.
So like a stress ball with a brain.
Like those
sure.
Those worms from Dune that control space folding?
Well, see, those aren't worms controlling that. You're thinking of the pilots who the spice mutates them over time, and they look like gross whale-ish sort of fish, gross things. But those are actual pilots that started off as humid, and then the abuse of the spice mutated them.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. Sure, that could be a thing.
Nice.
I also think that some sort of like fungal spore from space might be traveling out there and might have landed on Earth and gave.
Yeah, us, that's a popular because of shrooms and stuff. People will make that connection a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Question number 2. Do you believe in ghosts?
No.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Did you say no?
Yeah. No. No way.
My internet connection is unstable.
I think. Wade, can you hear me? Or Willy, can you hear me?
Yeah, it just kind of glitches every now and then, but we're good.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think that human life is an energy, just like I think all life is an energy. And I think that when our bodies die, that energy goes somewhere and maybe lingers in some spaces where other humans can sense the presence of that energy. But I don't think it's like a ghost. I don't think it's a unified consciousness that's like being tormented in some parallel existence.
Yeah. Are you religious?
I'm not religious. I would say that I at this point in my life, I would say that I'm spiritual insofar as that I believe that there is, at the very least, there is a power greater than us in the universe. And that is all that I can... That's as far as I can go at this point in my life. I don't believe in a.
Do you try to harness that power, or do you just acknowledge its existence?
I try and I try and follow the will of that power, and I feel like times in my life where I have suffered the most amount of turmoil is when I've been willfully working against the natural order of things, not just amongst people, but just in life. Yes. So I try and move with the flow of the river.
Okay. Do you believe in Bigfoot?
I can't rule out the existence of Bigfoot because we're discovering species all the time. But I don't think that that grainy 8mm film footage is of a creature called that we would call Bigfoot. I think it's a dude in a suit.
Okay. Well, then that answer bothers me because,
okay,
and no offense to you, I just mean the idea of Bigfoot only exists because of those like theories that it's like this Bigfoot thing. So it's like obviously a man-made construct. So why would you believe that this thing that is obviously man-made might exist out there just in theory?
Yeah, I think that the link between Homo sapiens and lower primates.
Yeah.
Could they have all died off, or is it possible that there are still a few out there that have been slowly throughout generations been kept alive, just, you know,
sure,
with dwindled sure, very few numbers.
Okay.
But like,
maybe it's just like a missing link kind of thing.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. I mean, there cultures throughout the eons have like reported creatures like Bigfoot, the Yeti, the abominable snowman is, I think, more of a Hollywood term for it. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, and some of those could be like, you could explain some of those by saying, oh, well, this person just saw a really scrawny bear on its back legs. And that's what that was.
Could be. Yeah.
But I think there are plenty of species out there that we haven't seen yet.
Okay. Do you believe in psychics?
No.
Fully hard no on psychics.
I'm going to say hard no.
Okay. Are you superstitious at all?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, you're like a four. Or a three or a four. So you're like kind of halfway. I would put you a little bit more toward Willie, but you know.
Okay.
An indiscernible amount. You're sort of right in the middle.
All right, cool. I think that's about what I was last time.
It's actually where a lot of people stand. The results aren't really as interesting as the conversation.
Yeah, right. That's how I feel too.
I hate to like quote the X-Files poster, but like, I want to believe. That doesn't mean right. I do believe.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I do believe.
You have a very open mind about stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's weird about me is like, for a lot of things, I don't want to believe because it means too much. It's like if there are aliens here on Earth, then why am I paying rent? You know, it shocks my... I'm like, I could just go hang out with some aliens and figure out what the universe is. Instead, I'm like, I got this cell phone.
Well, think of it this way, Willie. Rock stars exist. Why are you paying rent? Why not just hang out with some rock stars?
Well, but that doesn't get...
I think it's about access.
I think it's more about the idea of aliens existing is a world-changing phenomenon that would make everybody sort of reanalyze what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Wade's very good at vocalizing what I'm thinking about and not even coming close to saying. Yeah.
I think that would only affect the minority of human beings who would actually be awestruck by that. And the other ones be like, I'm going to buy more guns. Aliens, they're not coming here. God damn it.
That don't mess up my, please don't cancel my shows that I watch. You know, like you guys do whatever you want to do. I got to watch
better not,
The Bachelor and
it's better
the
not change
thing.
My life.
It would be a whole new revolution where, regardless of the aliens' intentions, we would be broken up into the camps that were pro aliens and anti aliens, and really, it's all going to come down from the top. Like, all the billionaires in the world are going to make up their mind on if these aliens are going to cost them money or not. And then that message is going to be sent down, whether they should be good or bad.
You know, who has to watch their ass in that scenario is the people that are pro-alien, because the anti-alien people are going to try and kill every pro-alien person they meet.
For sure. Like,
they're not going to try and convert anyone to their way of thinking.
Yeah,
I think that's why I like District 9 so much, because I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, like, this is a good representation of like how an alien species could just be another minority on Earth.
Yeah. I'm surprised that in that test, you don't talk about any sort of government conspiracies.
Well, we both believe in them.
Yeah,
we both believe in them. And also, we've sort of tried to get away from those things. Like, I like the more fantastical topics, because once you get into politics and stuff like that, it just becomes like a sort of boring lecture, and it's upsetting. And like, I really like the more like fun fantastical, like, it doesn't matter if I call Willie an asshole for believing this, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas if we're talking about like auditing the Fed or something, like, then it's like, no, well,
what's in there, goddamn it?
And we're also too stupid. Like, we're not knowledgeable enough on these like political things to like really get into those.
We did an episode about the Fed, and like, we just couldn't bring it to life.
Well, we also had an economist on, and he was just like shutting down everything we were saying because he was knowledgeable about it, and we're just morons who have a podcast.
I have a U.S. history professor friend who could come on your podcast, but
it would be awful.
It would be awful just because you would keep feeling like you were getting pantsed or deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
depending on where you're from.
The whole thing is supposed to be just like kind of a conversation, and when you get the expert in, then you're just like, oh, this guy's just gonna tell us everything. Well, there's no more conversation.
Yeah, here. If you were at the bar, because our show is a bar conversation, so like, if you were at the bar and you were complaining about the government, and then like an FBI guy walked in and started spouting off how you were wrong about everything, like, okay, well, I'm gonna go drink at the next bar.
Yeah, I'm not hanging out with any kind of law enforcement at a bar.
I would love to talk to an FBI agent at a bar. What I wouldn't want to talk to is someone who's like a fourth basement level like clerk from the city government, like, and be corrected by them.
Yeah.
And be corrected by them about parliamentary procedure in City Hall. Some
I don't
shit.
Think FBI agents would be fun to talk to either. Aren't they all just meatheads?
Well, I feel like most of them are like the equivalent of a military meathead. That like
maybe a lot of them were dorks.
Yeah, like maybe they were smart.
Yeah, there's the analyst version of the FBI guy.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever. All that aside, Willie, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi. The Zone of Silence, The Devil's Sea, The Devil's Triangle, Bermuda Triangle, all of these crazy anomalies that exist around us. Is there anything to these things? Are we just glorifying stories, or is there actually something paranormal to these things? Find out tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi.
Okay, Bermuda Triangle, stuff like that. Why don't we take a quick break and then jump into it?
Sci-fi.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Real Life Sci-Fi. We're here talking to our good friend Aaron Alberstein about weird anomalies in the world, like the Bermuda Triangle. Willie, take it away.
Well, I think we'll just start with just basically the legend of the Bermuda Triangle, and then I'll explain the other two, and then we'll go crazy. The Bermuda Triangle is basically the area was called the Devil's Triangle at one point. It's like 500,000 square miles of ocean off of
the tip of Florida goes up to Bermuda and then over to Puerto Rico. Supposedly, when Christopher Columbus went through it, he reported a great flame of fire that was probably a meteor, but that it crashed into the sea one night. Then he also talked about a strange light appearing, which, you know, I that was
did like he a, wait, he actually went through it
for he went through part of it. Yeah.
Even though they landed way up in fucking Plymouth Rock. Is that just where the pilgrims went? And I don't really know where Christopher Columbus went.
I don't know his path either, but he definitely went through a part of it.
Didn't Christopher Columbus end up in like the Dominican Republic or something like that? I don't think he landed on what we call the American mainland.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I have never actually thought about this.
But so
look it up, Wade.
This area, he basically had a UFO sighting around there too. But in a little bit, I'll explain some of the main stories that have happened in this area. But and I'm sure everybody knows what it is. But when you're in this area, people have problems using their compass. Which is weird. So it is an anomaly of the Earth that is legitimate. Not to say that every crazy story that has happened from here is actually. I mean, there are physical properties that are anomalous in this area, and so the Zone of Silence. That's an area in Mexico that also has anomalous stuff going on. When you are in the Zone of Silence, it's like radio waves don't work there.
Where is this?
It's I let me see if I pulled up something from this.
Okay, well, you look for that. A quick Columbus update.
All right.
He landed in the Bahamas.
So the Zone of Silence, the Mapimi Silent Zone, is in a desert patch near Durango, Mexico. Basically, radio signals and any type of communications can't be received in this area. I don't know how big it is, but
do people live there?
Yeah. And then one crazy thing about it is in 1970, there was this rocket. They were testing this rocket that they launched in Utah, and it was supposed to land in White Sands, New Mexico. And the rocket went off course and went hundreds of miles off course and landed in this area. And it had, it had some radioactive material in it, but it was crazy that this area that has no radio communication, like, attracted this rocket.
Was that when was that rocket failure?
1970.
Was it weird. NASA? Was it a NASA rocket or like a military rocket?
It was a NASA rocket. It was when Wernher von Braun, when he wasn't the head of NASA, he was just a rocket engineer there. They sent him there to investigate the crash.
He was a Nazi, right?
Yeah, he created the V2 rocket, and you know, a lot of people claim his innocence, but he was definitely aware that slave labor was dying to build his rockets that were killing people. So, I mean, like, he definitely is not an innocent Nazi.
Hey, so is LeBron James, and we all give him a pass.
Yeah, I mean, we're always more horrible in the past than we are in the present.
What's the third? So we've got the Bermuda Triangle. What did you call the second one? The Zone of Silence?
Zone of Silence?
Yeah, the Zone of Silence.
Like a D&D spell.
Right, it's cool. And then the last one is the Devil's Sea. The Devil's Sea is basically just an area in the Pacific Ocean. There have been a lot of crazy mystical disappearances in the Pacific Ocean too.
But that's like the entirety of the Pacific Ocean. It's huge, right?
I think this is based off of a lot of Japanese lore, and they've had a lot of crazy. I mean, here's the crazy thing: when it comes to the world's oceans, it's easy to just say that, like, well, maybe a white squall happened. Maybe a rogue wave happened, you know?
What's a white squall?
Yeah, what is it?
It's basically just a rogue wave. A lot of people didn't think existed for a long time, but basically you can get giant, like 90-foot waves out of nowhere for no reason in the middle of the ocean. And so people didn't believe in those a long time, but a lot of captains had stories of those, and they've basically proven those within the last 20 years. Like, yeah, there are random gigantic waves. A white squall is a sudden and violent windstorm, which is not accompanied by the black cloud. So, like, it doesn't look like a storm. All of a sudden, it's like there's a giant bad storm in the middle of the ocean. Mm. And so white squall is what everybody uses as an excuse. I mean, they're very real and they can tear you up. But the problem with white squalls is if you get one of these storms, most of the things that disappear that go into the mystery, if your ship's sinking, you still have time to radio that you need help, especially in modern times. And there are boats that have just disappeared without any SOS. So that's why a lot of people say, no, this couldn't be a white squall, because this is a giant storm. Like, it doesn't just happen. You kind of see it coming. And then if you see that you're in danger, even if your ship's sinking, like, ships don't sink in seconds.
I'm pretty sure I'm no sailor, but I'm pretty sure throughout the history of man sailing the seas, there have always been regions where they put on maps, don't go here. This is the worst place to go with your boat. Don't. There's no wind, or the water's really terrible, or whatever. There's monsters here.
Don't go there.
So I wonder if the Bermuda Triangle is sort of like a remnant of that practice of warning people away from certain areas of water.
Right. And so let's just jump into some of the stories from, I mean, cause like the zone of silence is pretty simple. It's like, hey, there's stories of radios not working. I mean, the radios, there's like proof that radios don't work in that area. And Wernher von Braun spent a lot of time there researching that area, but a lot of his stuff that he researched, like, wasn't public, you know, whatever. Just saying, like, there's a weird anomalous area in Mexico called the Zone of Silence. And I don't mean to brush it off like that, but with the Bermuda Triangle, there are some famous stories that there's like at least five major famous stories that add to that. And we can go over those real quick, right? So,
Before we go over them, hasn't there been more newer information about the Bermuda Triangle and like a lot of the shipwrecks and stuff that they find there are actually like from way north or something, and then they just, the current like takes them into the Bermuda Triangle? Or am I like misremembering something?
Well, I mean that definitely, the thing is when it comes to any of this stuff, everyone's trying to debunk everything. So there are stories that work in all realms where it's like, well, this ship wasn't from here. But the main mysterious stories don't have any answers. And so a lot of people are quick to say, oh, Bermuda Triangle. But
right. All right. Well, let's go through. You're going to do some flying ones as well as naval ones, right?
Yeah. So I'm just real quick. I haven't read this, but I guess William Shakespeare's play The Tempest, some scholars claim was based on a real life Bermuda shipwreck. But I don't know anything about that. But that may have created the mystery before it was really tagged as the Bermuda Triangle, you know, just that there's an area to be aware of.
Right.
Google, Google, Google.
Thank you for listening, but currently we're Googling.
Google, Google, Google.
Number one, Mary Celeste. This is one of the most mysterious stories of shipwrecks. It was found adrift in some other location in the Atlantic Ocean, but the connection to it is pretty strong.
In 1872, they found this boat and everything was normal, except there was no crew on it. And it was supposed to go from New York to Italy. There were seven crew members. Days after, a passing British ship called the De Gratia found the boat off of the Azores Islands. It was unmanned, no crew, no lifeboat was missing. Nine of the barrels in the cargo were empty, and there was a sword on the deck. No trace of the people aboard the vessel or missing lifeboat has ever been found.
Mary Celeste?
Yeah, studies of the ship ruled out the possibility of a pirate attack.
Did they find the frozen pizzas?
Is that that's the name of the pizza?
Well, it's Mama Celeste. I can only imagine that Mary is Mama. Yeah, and it's going from New York to Italy, the two kings of pizza.
So the Azores are closer to Portugal than Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, like that's that's where it was found. But I think through the path is how they attached it to the...
Right.
The possibility of natural disaster was on the list. Many suggested the role of an undersea earthquake. Anyways, it was a perfectly skilled crew, and supposedly it was good weather.
The boat is just there. The boat did not go down.
The boat didn't go down, and nothing was missing off of the boat, including lifeboats, life rafts, or the valuable stuff on it.
So they get on, it's just a ghost boat, no crew.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And there was you know, valuable cargo, and there was like alcohol, a bunch of alcohol in barrels and stuff.
Ghost boat.
Here's what I think
happened. I think one guy went crazy and started eating the other people, and they're all like, I'd rather let the sea eat me. And they jumped off, and then he jumped off after him. What do you guys think?
I mean, I do like the idea of one guy just killed everyone on board one by one. You'd have to do it swiftly, like all in a row within
before minutes. They could gang up.
You'd have to keep calling people over to the side of the boat. Hey, man, look at this thing over here.
Hey, have you seen George? I think he might be over here. Come look with me.
Everyone else
stay below deck.
Somebody made those rare seafood things that can kill people if you don't cook them right. He made a meal.
Oh, like a blowfish?
He did it wrong. They all died, and then he committed suicide.
and then a storm came and flew them all off the boat, but the boat was fine.
You're saying he died of embarrassment?
Yeah. Like, man, I thought I could cook this. I killed everyone I know.
He was a
first
teenager.
Case of literal dying of embarrassment.
And he didn't want anybody to know, so he dumped all the bodies off and then had this last meal.
Could be. It could be that.
I like that. What do you think, Aaron? Just first theory.
So my first theory is that they had to abandon ship for some reason, and that they did so in a way that they thought was their only recourse. Or maybe they all went nuts and decided they needed to abandon ship.
Oh, you know what could be a good one? They were sailing by the island with the sirens, and they all jumped over to go hang out with the sirens, and the boat kept going.
Yeah, they were horny.
Maybe they all took acid.
They'd gone 3 weeks without sex. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine that? I can't.
There's one.
I can imagine 3 years without sex.
That's the most unreasonable thing I've ever heard about sailors jumping ship to have sex with mermaids because they're so horny. Like, dude, I've gone years without sex. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be jumping.
I don't know.
Off the boat.
I mean, maybe in like the 1600s, you could just get laid constantly.
Yeah, buggery was quite popular.
What do you got? Number two, Ellen Austin. I'm just going to read this. It's going to be easier. This is from Marine Insight. It's an unnerving triangle mystery associated with the American White Oak schooner, Ellen Austin. 1881, 210 feet long, Ellen Austin was on her way to New York from London when she stumbled upon a derelict near the Bermuda Triangle. Everything, a derelict, an empty boat.
Everything seemed fine until the unidentified schooner drifting north of the Sargasso Sea, but the missing crew. Captain Baker of the Ellen Austin asked to observe the boat for 2 days to make sure it wasn't a trap. They basically watched this empty boat for 2 days. It was empty. The captain jumped onto the abandoned vessel
to find the well-packed shipment and no sign of the crew. Another situation where it wasn't pirates because they didn't take any of the valuable stuff. The crew's just missing.
So this is named after the boat that found it and not the boat that is abandoned?
Yeah, right. Isn't that weird? Well, here's the thing. And so they tow the boat back.
Oh, cool.
However, after 2 days of sail on calm waters, a white squall separated the path of the two ships and the derelict boat vanished again. Days after the storm, according to stories, Captain Baker's lookouts could see the vessel and realize that it was drifting again, even though they had crew members on it that were supposed to be driving it. Right?
Like an inept crew members? Come on.
But strangely, then when they found it again, no one was on board.
Whoa!
So another version of the story suggests a second attempt by Baker to bring her back to land, but ended with the same fate before abandoning the cursed vessel. Other reports suggest that the boat was once more spotted, but this time had a separate crew than the crew that the Ellen Austin put on it. So that's weird.
I don't know if I believe that.
Who's Ellen Austin again?
That's just Ellen Austin is it's the boat that found the dead boat.
Got it. I mean, you know, one thought that I have is that I could picture a crew of a boat abandoning the boat if they think that staying with the boat and going back to wherever they're from would be trouble for them. Like, say, someone high up, high ranking officer does something like kills a crew member. And so they're all left with this problem. Like, okay, we can either report this guy for murdering this person or we can split.
But they would have taken a lifeboat. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
My first thought is always foul play when you have like an abandoned boat with nothing taken from it. It always sounds like someone did something wrong and then they just split to run away from the thing that they did.
This is like, no one's ever done, this is another, I'm going to like trademark copyright this before I say it. No one can steal this idea. Like The Thing on a Boat would be a really good movie.
Yeah, for reals, man. For reals.
So maybe not alien
abduction, but alien landing.
Yeah, like it infiltrated the boat and they all freaked out and they all turned on each other and it just ended with them all like jumping overboard.
Well, what if it was just a parasite that
there's a space movie like that. There's a space movie with Sam Neill about a haunted spaceship.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a really weird name, right?
Like Leviathan, but it's not Leviathan. That's an underwater movie.
So here we go with some of the good. Oh, sorry to cut you off.
I mean, I keep thinking of the movie Ghost Ship with one of the best intros, best cold open of any.
I haven't seen it. I'll have to check it out.
I thought Ghost Ship was like a super B movie.
Hey, it is. Only the cold open is worth watching.
Okay.
the rest of the movie sucks.
So here we go.
Well, what happens in the cold open? Because I'm not going to watch Ghost Ship.
Oh, yeah. Give us the cold open.
A bunch of people are on the deck of a ship. Let's say it's like early 1900s. So it's like a Titanic type ship. And everyone's having like a gala ball event on the deck, right? It's nighttime. And it's, you know, a bunch of fancy hoity-toity people. And there's kids and adults. And there's like a orchestra band and captains and officers and stuff. And then some kind of accident happens and a wire snaps and sweeps over the deck of the ship and clotheslines everyone, except it's like a clean cut So everyone's standing there stunned, and then you see people's like bodies sliding off.
Yeah. That's cool. Like, I love that. I love that when they do that.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Were you thinking of Event Horizon?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was thinking.
I watched that in theaters. It scared the hell out of me, but it's not that great of a movie.
I was mad at that movie because there was a lot of the quietest moment followed by the loudest moment.
Yeah.
And then my friend be like, you were scared, right? Blue, I was with Blue. Blue's like, you were scared. And I'm like, I'm not scared. I'm going to jump when it goes from 0 to 100 every time.
Right. Yeah, you're startling. I also remember it had like, and as a kid, I didn't know this term, but it's just like full of tropes and full of things that I'd already seen in other space monster movies. So it wasn't that. But
I've never seen it. I was always told it was scary, and so I never watched it.
At some point, Sam Neill's character goes insane and gouges his own eyes out, but that's not the end of him in the movie. So for the rest of the movie, he's this fucking dude with gouged out eyes. It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
And like he's like still the bat. He's still like, because he's gone insane, he's now turned into a villain. And even with his eyes gouged out, he's still like pursuing people to kill them. It's great.
Okay, so here's the big
shot.
Here's one of the good ones. Oh, yeah.
I might be misremembering some of that, by the way.
The disappearance of the USS Cyclops. It's one of the Navy's biggest fuel ships, and it marks the largest loss of life in the history of the U.S. Navy in one single incident. And now this is back in 1918. This gigantic ship went out from Brazil to Baltimore through the Bermuda region. It had 10,000 tons of manganese ore. There were over 300 crew members on board. It was a good day, no weather. The first and only message sent by the ship indicated no sort of troubles.
Wait, did you say what year this is?
1918.
Okay.
So then all of a sudden, the ship was just never heard of again. It goes to the Bermuda area, and it's just missing. They had an entire search area. Nothing was ever found. No remains, no ship, no crew members. They never sent out a distress signal. Like in 1918, they had very capable radio messages, you know. No one on board responded to radio calls from other vessels in the vicinity. Due to its mysterious disappearance, Cyclops had become part of the list of more than 100 ships and planes to have vanished under strange circumstances in the Bermuda Triangle, USS Cyclops.
So I'm wondering in 1918, what kind of boat that would have been with how many people on board?
309.
That sounds huge for that time. That's crazy.
Yeah, picture picture a battleship without any of the weapons on top.
The hull
would have been that shape, and it would have been really, if it was loaded with ore, it would have been sitting in the water deeply.
So here's the other thing: the Carol A. Deering,
steam powered, or right? Probably. I don't think they had diesel engines.
Yeah. So here's this five-masted commercial schooner, whatever that means, is one of the most written about maritime mysteries of the 20th century due to complete mystery around its abandonment. In 1921, Carol Deering was found, that's the name of the boat, was found hard aground on the treacherous rocks of Hatteras Diamond Shoals, North Carolina. There were speculations that the vessel was involved in rum running. When the investigation team in Barbados reached the vessel after days of effort in the rough sea, what they found was a deserted ship with all the crew members missing, along with the crew's personal belongings, ship naval equipment, logbooks, life rafts, all that stuff was still there. So it's like, it's just an empty ship. Nobody took anything, no life rafts. I mean, that's just fucking strange, right? So like a lot of these people just automatically go like, oh, aliens abducted them.
if they were thinking it was rum running, did they find any rum, or maybe they just landed and took the rum?
No, they found, I mean, all of the stuff was still in the boat.
So like nobody took the rum, nobody. Wait. This one said it was involved in rum running, but.
See, I could also imagine pirates deciding, okay, we're going to take everyone off of this boat. And we're going to come back and get this boat later. But we don't have enough guys to do that. We have enough guys to take all these people off the boat.
Yeah, the other boat still had all the alcohol in it. This one, they said it was involved in rum running, but it doesn't say that any rum was missing, because if it was missing, it was like not logged.
Right. So they don't really know.
So it could. Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the first thing you get a log
point.
If you are being besieged by pirates, it probably goes into the log immediately. BTW, if you don't read anything else, it's pirates.
Well, I mean,
isn't that poor pirating? Don't you just kill the people and then take the boat?
Well, I think you do whatever is the easiest, because pirates aren't known for hard work. So if it's easier to get everyone off of the boat first, then kill them after that, and then come back to a nice bloodless ship.
The weird thing about pirates is throughout the history of boats, pirates have been around. And so people are always on the lookout for them. So during times when radio exists, you get the SOS of, we're getting invaded by pirates. Who's out there?
Right.
And like, no matter where you are.
Well, you know what we haven't talked about? In the Bermuda Triangle, do radio signals work?
Yeah. Just the only thing that really goes haywire is our compasses.
Okay.
Have scientists ever explored that to figure out why that is? There's some kind of magnetic disturbance.
Well, I mean, the short answer is, if so, I didn't see any of it, but I didn't look too hard for it. You know, like the, meaning yeah. nobody spent money on trying to figure out too much of the anomalies, because the Navy would have been the first people to spend money on that, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So like this, the most famous case, I think that's, let me read this. I'll get to the last one before this. What? It's not even on here. What the fuck? Okay. Well, this last boat is called the Witchcraft. In 1967, the Witchcraft left Miami, it was a 23-foot luxury yacht.
67, you said?
Yes. Basically, this boat, the area indicating the location of the ship. Hold on. So these guys needed help. The Coast Guard received a call from the captain saying that the ship had hit something, but there was no substantial damage. Coast Guard goes to check it out. They get there in like 20 minutes. And then the boat is missing. No deserted. Wait, hold on. The area indicating the location of the ship was completely deserted, with no signs of any ship having been stranded or even present there previously. And basically that boat was, that particular cruiser was virtually unsinkable. Not to mention that numerous life-saving devices present on board, none of those things were found, no distress signals. So like, hey, we hit something. It's not bad though. We might need help. And then it disappears. So they had communication, and then they show up and there's nothing.
Yeah. So I Googled Bermuda Triangle radio, and there's actually a distress call from 1980 of a plane that's flying, and they're like, there's something in front of us. Like, it keeps showing up in front of us. And then they lost communication. Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, right?
Pretty crazy that every time someone calls their boat unsinkable, it fucking has a horrible tragedy happening to it. Like, maybe you shouldn't say that about your fucking boat.
You're tempting fate a little bit, I think.
So yeah. Here's the main. So I'll do one aircraft, then I'll do the main. Then I'll do the main story. So this one in 1948,
A Douglas DC-3 aircraft disappeared while on a flight from San Juan, Puerto Rico to Miami. No trace of the aircraft, no trace of the 32 people on board were ever found. A Civil Aeronautics Board investigation found there was insufficient information available on which to determine the probable cause of the disappearance. So basically, like, a DC-3 is a pretty big, I mean, it's a pretty big plane.
The plane ones are a little bit more boring to me, because it would be great if they just found these planes and they're still flying and there's just nobody on them. But like, planes just crash. Like, we still lose planes to this day. And it's just like, how are we losing planes?
Well,
John McCain crashed like six.
That last big plane that was.
Yeah, that's why he's a loser.
he crashed so many planes. He only got caught once, though.
That one that was missing from Singapore, that was in the Devil's Sea. So that's part of the Devil's Sea mystery. How did the whole plane just go missing when we've got radar and all this stuff?
Oh, talk really quickly about the Devil's Sea. So where is that?
Well, I mean, this one isn't as defined. It's just the Pacific Ocean. It's basically just compiling all the crazy stories from the Pacific Ocean and being like, well, the Japanese call this the Devil's Sea.
Right. The Pacific Ocean is just too fucking big. Like, it's so easy to get lost. It's half of the world.
Yeah. But that one plane, the Singapore plane missing, like, how the fuck did that? They, you know, it really, with everything that all the technology we have today, we should have found it.
Well, Willie, what do you think? Like, are these anomalies? Are they just like...
Well, let me get into this the main flight first, and then I'll answer that, because I have a crazy I'm on board with the crazy theory. So, flight 19. This was a training flight of 5 TBM Avenger torpedo bombers. They disappeared on December 5th, 1945. The squadron's flight was planned to take them due east from Fort Lauderdale for 141 miles. And then north for 71 miles and then back over. Basically, they just had this exercise. It'd take them 2 hours to do. The flight never returned to the base. But while they were communicating and talking about how confused they were, is that the same one? Hold on. This is a very quick story if this is the one. That makes me mad because I had a different window open that had the story out better. Hold on, let's see. Okay. So there were 14 airmen on this flight, right? This is 1945. And the whole time they're talking about how... So wait, the Navy Lieutenant Charles Carroll Taylor... He had about 2,500 flying hours, mostly in this type of aircraft. So he was an expert in this aircraft. The whole time,
yeah, he's. I mean, if you listen to Malcolm Gladwell, he needed 10,000. So he's like 20% there.
Right. So the whole thing is their whole transcript is available. You know, he's like, they think they know where they're at, and there's this expert leading them, and it's a simple operation that they do all the time. So here's some of the transcripts. It's like, I don't know where this is. The main guy saying, I don't know where we are. We must have got lost after that last turn. And then somebody being like, please identify yourself so someone can help you, because there was some other plane or boat in the area that like heard their distress and was like, you know, like, say it again, we don't know who you are. Just moments after that, FT-28, this is FT-74, what's your trouble? Both of my compasses are out and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale. I'm over land, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down and how to know to get to Fort Lauderdale. At any rate, here's this one, so somebody comes on and tells him what to do, right? Not where to turn, where they think they are. And he says, damn it, if we could just fly west, we could get home. Head west, damn it. And, their compasses weren't working.
Oh, they were flying at night?
No. It's the middle of the day.
And he says, did you not find west?
Right?
Well, yeah, the radar's all fucked up. Is it noon or something?
The compasses are messed up, but you just follow the sun. Like, you could tell. He said, we didn't fly far east enough.
You have a watch on your hand. You know where the sun is. You know which way west is.
His last message received was holding 270. We didn't fly far enough east. We may as well turn around and fly east again. Basically, they're lost. All planes close up tight. We'll have to ditch unless we landfall. Basically, they're running out of gas.
Yeah.
So this one's just weird because you have this expert pilot doing a regular training thing, and they get lost because their compasses were left. And the official Navy basically said their response to what happened was they might as well have flown to Mars. So, I mean, they shouldn't have said that because that threw everybody into a crazy, like, well, what? What do you mean? They were missing that bad? You know, like it added to the lore that the official story included flying to Mars.
Right. Well, yeah, basically, the Navy's story was that they became disoriented and flew out into the open ocean, into the Atlantic.
Yeah. And, you know, they never found any of their stuff. And the weird thing is they were transmitting radio signals the whole time. They were just lost.
Fuck.
And so they didn't
have the tech in 45. They didn't have the technology to triangulate or calculate the strength of radio signal and figure out how far away they were.
Right. I mean, the thing is
I can believe that there weren't any boats or submarines in the path that they were taking. I guess that's possible. But in 45, like this is during World War II or just after it. Our Navy was at its peak.
Yeah.
It had never been larger at that point. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if you say triangulate, I don't think they. I have no idea, but they must not have known how to triangulate at that time, right?
I mean, you can measure the strength of I'm sure they have ways and had ways then to measure the strength of radio signal and determine, okay, we know that you're moving away from us because your radio signal keeps getting weaker.
Sure, but even if you told them that and you said fly west and they're like, oh, we don't know which way west is, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah,
I think you could give them all that info, but they had no idea how to take it.
Well, couldn't you say, well, listen, guys, over the last 30 minutes, your signal's gotten weaker and weaker. I advise you to do a 180 so your signal get stronger and stronger, and we'll figure it out from there. You know, hot and cold. We'll play hot and cold. Sure,
but I'm picturing that there's no visibility because otherwise, yeah, use the sun. And then if your compass is broken, like in a plane, how do you know what 180 is?
See, they told him to put the sun on his port wake and fly north, right? To go to Fort Lauderdale. Like they were telling him how to not be lost, and it wasn't working. And hold on. Base operations then asked if the flight leader's aircraft was equipped with the standard YG-IFF transmitter, which could be used to triangulate the flight's position, but the message was not acknowledged by them. Later, he would indicate his transmitter was activated, so it should have been working.
So
this did have technology mishaps in this too, where it's like, you know,
They told him to switch to a different frequency. He says he can't switch to different frequencies. He's got to keep his planes intact. So, like, it's for some reason he couldn't switch frequencies to help figure out some other stuff.
Wow. So they all just had a or at least like the leader of that formation had some kind of just catastrophic electrical failure, and all of his instruments were fucked, and he also couldn't find the sun.
Yeah, like, and I want to say that the other people's instruments weren't working either, because wouldn't you just say, hey, you take the lead?
I mean, I think that's the whole thing, right? If we're working under this like weird magic of the Bermuda Triangle, like your instruments don't work.
Right. I mean, but pilots are trained to be able to fly their planes without instruments. If everything fails, but the stick is still working and the throttle is still working and your flaps are working, you can still navigate. Like they yeah. teach you how to do that. So like pulling a 180 is not a problem at all.
Well, apparently it is a problem because the entire training exercise went right. down.
Yeah, the three of us aren't going to figure out how they could have gotten their ass out of that situation.
I just think I've always thought of these like weird places as like, oh, like some kind of magnet is like fucking up our instruments or whatever. But do you guys think it's more than that? Do you think it's because, like, you know, I just read that flight from 1980 who said there's something weird in front of them.
Yeah, that's like nuts.
Is there like any kind of like supernatural thing?
So here's I have two basic stories. I mean, well, first off, one of the main scientific reasons that people say is like, sure, white squalls. It could be a squall, you know, just sinks people. But in every situation, there's minus the planes, there's still a chance to send out a signal for help. Some people suggest that there in this area, there are there could be gigantic methane gas releases. And if there was so much gas release, the ship would basically fall through the air bubbles and sink within seconds because of
methane is thinner than oxygen.
Yeah, it's just falling through the bubbles down in the ocean. So it basically sinks because it's falling through too many bubbles.
But that doesn't explain the boats that are just found with no crew.
Yeah, I know. And it doesn't explain the planes right. either.
Yeah.
So one idea is, so here's the thing. Aliens are always thrown out by like people trying to debunk how crazy the Bermuda Triangle. People suggest aliens and witchcraft. Well, I will say in the defense of aliens as of now, there are giant stories that are presented out there proving that our military believes that UFOs are real. We have the Nimitz account. We have the Pentagon story saying that they're using Black Project money to still investigate UFOs today. And then recently there was a story of a pilot who said that he thought that there was a missile that was shot in front of him. Turns out it was a cylinder-style UFO. So now, since that one story came out, UFOs are allowed to be back into the mainstream stories.
Yeah, well, but sure. That doesn't do, because all of those stories are just UFOs. Harm comes to them.
Right. And when the military is talking about UFOs, they're not talking about alien craft. They're talking about a flying object that they can't identify.
Well,
that's all it is.
But
it's just shorthand for radio speak. It's like, I just saw something. I don't know what it is. Can you guys tell me what it is?
Well, listen. I understand what a UFO is, but I'm saying that the recent stories, like the Nimitz account, is them saying, like, well, whatever this is, it doesn't belong to anybody that is currently making technology.
Right.
So. Could be an alien probe, yeah, sure, but like to me, if there's an alien story to this, I feel like there are more UFOs over the ocean than there are over land, and so my quick alien story is, hey, let us do our business, you know, we're not here to mess with humans. But if a human gets too close, it's like, just get rid of these things. It's not an abduction story. It's a danger story.
So they're like fire ants.
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
I mean, it's a good analogy, but it also simplifies the aliens to a point where they're just going to murder people who come around.
Well, I mean, like it's kind of like I compare it to if we're clearing out a forest, we're not going to go announce to the monkeys that we're clearing the forest, but we might kill some that are in the way of the.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, humans kill animals all the time without even thinking about it. You ask someone with a bulldozer in a rainforest if they're shouting out to all the creatures to get out of the way. They're not.
Well, you're also citing the dumbest fucking people in the world that are just fine with like tearing down rainforests for. I mean, I would like to think that the aliens are a little bit more advanced than we are when it comes to like life.
But here's my parallel, right? So like
that's what you would like time, to believe.
The first time I ever plowed a field.
I would love to believe it.
My uncle left me in this tractor. He's like, plow this field. Tell me how to drive the tractor and left me alone.
Right, but you're not. But you're a dumb kid in a fucking plow. Like this is not the comparison that I'm making. I'm making let's use Avatar. Let's use Avatar for an example. Dumb movie where the military people are just like these bloodthirsty, like we need to get the vibranium or whatever the fuck they called it, unobtainium. and we don't care about these like indigenous creatures because it's like an analog for like, you know, pilgrims and shit. If aliens are so advanced to come here, are they really going to just be like, okay, if any of these humans come near us, like we're going to just fucking torch them?
Well, I don't think, I mean, personally, I don't think that they have to not be from here, you know? So like, just to finish my tractor story, I killed hundreds of rabbits that day, families of rabbits. And I was crying and I was just like, well, fuck it. I mean, like I have to do a good job plowing. The rabbits wouldn't leave their families. And I just ran them over with the plow. I know it's different, but I'm like, man, fuck it. I wasn't even getting paid.
I'm sorry that you did that. I'm sorry that you felt like you had to kill a bunch of rabbits. I guess if the aliens see us as rabbits, then yeah, maybe. But like,
well, I'm saying though that like, what if it was their technology, like the equivalent of radiation? And so like they get hit with a blast of radiation on accident and they're so hot. They're certain that they just need to jump into the ocean, you know.
Like, I'm more on board with that.
They're just working. It's like, hey, we're mining. Fuck, you guys aren't supposed to be here, but we're not going to turn you around. And then they go through the radiation beam or whatever the fuck they're doing.
Right. Oh, okay. I like that.
I could buy that, Mike. They're all of a sudden everyone on board is microwaved, and some people are like, I'm fucking jumping in that cold ass water to cool myself. I'm burning. Yeah. And everyone else is going to see that and be like, yeah, I'm going to do that too. Sure. I could buy that. But wouldn't people that were inside the ship be blocked?
Yeah. From it? Like somebody might not have made it out for sure. You would find, you would find a boat with somebody inside that was melted or something.
Yeah.
So I don't buy that either. What I do buy, which is weird. So I think that our planet has energy points on it. And one of the things that I think are if you take like the energy of the Earth is equivalent to a Merkaba, you have a two different pyramids upside down on each other, you know, basically that, and those are like points of energy. So there could be points on the Earth that have extra energy. And I mean, this is so sure. Maybe megalithic sites were built on these because of the extra energy there. There's this weird line. If you take the Giza pyramids and you draw a line from them around the Earth to Easter Island, it is an equatorial distance that, I mean, like, it's, fuck, how do I say this? Basically, within that line of just connecting these two structures lie a lot of the major structures from the Earth that are these sites, right? Let me just list some off because I don't even know what half of these are. Machu Picchu is in line with that. The Nazca lines, Paracas, Angkor Wat. I can't even say half of these things. Petra.
Right. Okay. Well, so a bunch of sort of world wonders.
Cusco. Yeah. Yeah. And
world heritage sites.
And so, I mean, like, it's easy to say, oh, these are aligned. You know, what about Pangaea? But I feel like Pangaea kind of mostly happened to, a lot of the shifting happened before humans got here. The shifting takes so long that not much shifting of the continents has happened since humans showed up. Right. And so one idea that I have been looking at is that there is I believe in Hollow Earth, but maybe the Hollow Earth is actually this energy. These energy points could actually be portals to other places. So maybe these things have disappeared by basically just going into a portal. There's this triangle image on the sun. I should pull this up before I start talking about that. But hold on. Let me gather something real quick. I do all this research and then I can't spit it back out because my memory's shit. And I'll cut all this out, of course. Well, I mean, what do you guys think of while I look stuff up? What do you guys think of, like, the idea that there are different points of energy, maybe magnetic field stuff, whatever? Could there be portals of any kind on the Earth around us that we're unaware of?
I mean, you know, it's an uninhabited piece of the Earth, right? It's all water. So for this phenomenon to keep happening, there must be something that's only happening sometimes, right? Like, it's an intermittent phenomena, because there's also ships and planes that go through it and it's fine.
Yeah. There's a lot of regular traffic through the Bermuda Triangle.
There's definitely a long list of real things that have happened with boats and planes that have disappeared or crashed or experienced, trouble with their radios or their compasses or whatever. Like, that's real.
And the main debunkers basically say, like, well, sure, these are crazy, but it's not more crazy than the rest of the world instances. And I'm like, well, if there were other sites that we didn't identify, it could be specific, whatever.
So the place in Mexico, the
zone of silence. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like it it ties in with the Bermuda Triangle because of the radio thing, or are there also other things going on there that besides the radio interference?
I mean, I subscribe to this idea that the electromagnetic field is being affected by just the regular. Now this Merkaba energy is basically a geometric energy. So it's like, you know, in my parallel is, if you have running water, there is energy going around the water it's kind of like, if you have, I mean, that might be a little more on the edge, but like, if you have just energy going through a cable, you can tell that that energy is there because, and you can tell what direction it's going because there is an energy going around the cable that you can measure. So you can tell if there's energy going through a cable by measuring the other type of energy going around it. And it's the same way. That's how wireless charging works. So like, you don't need to have, you can use the rotational energy to charge stuff too, without actually having to plug into it. So like how charging your wireless toothbrush works, you know, without actually plugging it in. And you know, you can charge phones without plugging them in. It's that same energy because it's there and they're figuring out how to tap into it. It's very new to science. I probably don't even really teach it in science classes, you know, mostly because I haven't updated their shit. But so take a magnetic field of a planet. Would there be points on it that had extra energy? And so my quick answer to that is, if you look at the top of Saturn, there is a hexagon at the top of it, a perfect hexagon. That's like, and I say that is there because you have a rotating planet. It has a molten core that is spinning. And so this magnetic field also, the way that it creates a magnetic field is very geometrical. So there will be points that are stronger than other points, just naturally. Just regular geometry. And so I think that this planetary energy of it rotating, we don't know too much about. Maybe megalithic sites were built on them because they could somehow tap into it. The ley lines, I don't know. And so, I mean, this is a bad... Well, let me just read this real quick. The Merkaba is described in Hebrew, right? It means chariot. It's used in the Bible to refer to the throne chariot of God. The Jewish biblical scholars say that the imagery of the Merkaba is not meant to be taken literally, but it's a chariot accompanying the angels. They're like analogies for various ways that God reveal himself in the world. Basically, it's a multi-layered analogy. It offers insight into the nature of man, and sure, the Merkabas have ancient biblical roots. They're commonly known for special shape and sacred geometry. It's a star tetrahedron with two interpenetrating three-sided pyramids. So you take a pyramid, flip it over, and then you have like a star tetrahedron. So in the same way that power going through a cable has rotational energy around it, and water also, maybe a spinning planet basically creates a Merkaba of its own, of like the energy points. Mm-hmm. And so one idea is that the gods that they're speaking of revealed themselves to the Merkaba because that was a portal from where they were from. So traveling interstellarly isn't about driving through space. It's about finding these portal points. I know it's crazy, but I'm like, oh, I could believe in that for a second.
Yeah, I could believe in that.
That these places are portals to The reason they never found the crew is because they're on some other planet. They like show up on another planet and yeah. then they just die because they can't breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so maybe that's where some UFOs are coming from. Like if UFOs are from alien intelligence, I would assume most UFOs are probes. That's just my assumption. But like if there was a portal to go from any planet because of it just tapping into that energy, you know, it's like if you talk to somebody about flying through space, the quickest way to get to Mars is not to fly straight through it. It's to fly around and grab the gravitational energy from other planets. So it's like driving wise. And of course you have to match where it lands to also, but like
you right, would it's never a slingshot thing to. Like in Armageddon.
Yeah, but yeah. But the path is using gravity. So take that to the next level where we live in a dimensional world where we don't even perceive all of the dimensions.
Sure.
What we call a portal might just be turning left, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah. I have nothing to refute any of that, and nor do I have anything to add to it. It's very interesting.
And it sucks because we'll also never figure it out. I mean, like when the first aliens come, we're not going to interview them about all the weird stuff. We're just going to either categorize them or attack them. there's no good situation of.
Well, that's very short-sighted. I mean, somebody's going to win. If we attack them, they'll probably beat us, and then we'll live in this weird world, and they'll tell us all about this new shit.
Ooh, yeah, I dig that. It's like all the leftover people's like, we know you guys didn't mean to hurt us. It was just these assholes. We can read.
Yeah, or we'll just be dogs and.
Yeah, then the aliens are like, now we're going to take your guns.
I would be a dog. I mean, dogs have a great life. I would be a dog to an alien. They just like Ooh. Feed me and. Like play with me and stuff.
You might know, a lot of dogs are living toys to their owners.
But they don't
get,
know it.
Get treated as well as a toy gets treated.
Wait, is that bad or good?
Bad. A lot of dogs aren't treated like living creatures that have feelings and thoughts. A lot of dogs are treated just like an object in the house.
I guess when you assume they're dumb and you don't have that much love in your heart.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some people who have no real emotional bond with their animal. To them,
that's
it's just like this
crazy
this toy they're proud of.
I know.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. What do you guys think, Aaron? Does any of this do you draw any conclusions? What are you thinking?
I think that these anomalies, these incidences, these disappearances are caused by some sort of earthbound force, some sort of force of natural science on Earth, and not an extraterrestrial force.
Willie, what did you come upon with all of your research? Did you choose a side?
I lean towards something that seems supernatural that is very normal that we just haven't perceived yet. Like when I first learned about sprites, which are when lightning happens, there's like residual lightning that happens way above it, like in the atmosphere. And I was like, oh, that looks crazy. I don't know what that is. And I'm just like, I think that if we haven't seen it, we don't know. Sure, listen, I believe in science and I know we can predict a lot of things, but science is based on a lot of the things that we've seen. And so I think that there is, I really believe that there are energy points on the Earth because of the electromagnetic field that like maybe they knew about before. I don't know how. I'm not saying that they're smart or anything. I'm just saying like they may have perceived them in some way. We don't. And there's definitely more than meets the eye to the world. Robots in disguise.
Yeah, I think it was a witch. I think a witch did it. And she was like, fuck you. Like someone, she was like, what am I thinking of? Where you like stab the dolls and stuff?
Oh, voodoo.
Voodoo.
Voodoo. So some voodoo, like Havana witch, came up to Florida and they're like, you're a fucking Havana witch. Like, we don't like you. And she was like, oh, well, then I'm going to curse everything from Bermuda to Puerto Rico. and then similarly, another witch like did the Mexico thing. But that was like less of a voodoo witch and more of like, whatever weird. They're weird down there. They got like Dio de los Muertes and stuff. Like they're like kind of obsessed with like death. So whatever kind of like
They're not like American witches.
They're not like American witches. We just like Halloween where we have like fun ghosts and they have like scary skeletons, which is much more morbid than just scary ghosts.
Now that you bring that up, like, have you seen the Disney movie Coco or the Pixar movie?
I haven't seen it yet.
I think I saw it.
I didn't know much about the Day of the Dead, and like, they really, it's fucking crazy how what the story is. But you know, the movie is really good, and I cried really hard. It's a really sad, good movie. But I didn't know what the Day of the Dead was really. And it's weird because
you took French in high school instead of Spanish.
Yeah. It's weird how much of the afterlife is in that story. I mean,
so Day of the Dead is like a holiday where you honor your dead ancestors, right?
Yeah, but there's like skeletons and it's spooky and it's way scarier than Halloween.
But I think they make it less.
No, it's way scarier, and they are scarier than we are, and they definitely have witches that caused all this shit. And some witch in the Pacific was like, fuck all of the Pacific, and so anytime a plane goes down or a boat disappears, it's because of a witch.
I'm glad you brought up witches, because in a lot of
Atlantic, but yeah.
In a lot of the, anybody trying to debunk anything?
No, I'm saying the third one, the sea. I can't remember what he called the sea.
The Devil Sea.
Yeah, the Pacific.
Oh, the Devil Sea. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But in a lot of the debunking stuff, they're like, listen, people are claiming aliens and witches. It's none of this. It's probably methane gas. You know, whatever. They have their easy science answer that hasn't been proven either. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, well, don't discount those theories just because you don't believe in them.
Oh, no, I'm not discounting them. I'm laughing at how they try to discount everything else by being like, it's not aliens, because they also said witches, you know. They're just like, look at these idiots. Every time I read any
story. You know what we haven't really talked about? Alien witches. And that's like, that will be crazy when aliens come and then aliens have witches also. Ugh.
Oh, man.
If aliens come and they're doing spells, watch out.
Oh, yeah, gosh. That's going to be crazy.
Because the first thing they're going to need after that long distance travel is some fresh sperm for their spells.
Yeah,
that's witches, what they use. They use witches twigs and need sperm.
Cum. They need cum. It's like the main thing in all their potions. Yeah.
Twigs. Common twigs.
Yeah, twigs.
If aliens show up and they're wearing gemstones on their necklaces, the new age is it.
Oh my god. Can you imagine how fucking smug all the new age people are gonna be if aliens come and they're wearing crystals?
Ugh. Yeah.
Like, the worst people in the world are gonna be right. We'll never hear the end of it.
I told you I was vibrating higher.
Okay.
I told you this tourmaline took away my, you know, my negative energy.
And then we all have to like wear crystals and shit. Ugh, gross. I'll just fight the aliens at that point. I'm not going to live in a world filled with crystals.
The aliens get here and they're like, do you know where we can buy some cool rose quartz?
It's good for money. We need money.
Our money is rose quartz.
If we put this rose quartz under our pillow, we will be gain financial independence.
There must be something wrong with you. You don't have turquoise in your pocket?
I can't. Turquoise is for procreation.
These salt lamps, they must be your leaders.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, well, oh man. Okay, I don't want to get into it, but all that voodoo crystal stuff. What's the New Mexico place we went? That's like the hotbed of all that stuff.
Oh, in Arizona, Sedona, Arizona. Yeah, there were more crystal shops than fast food places. I mean,
no, but it kind of applies because of it. They have those vortexes or what? Where did we go? Yeah. Where it's like,
yeah, they have
they called a vortex.
A couple of vortexes out there, yeah. And
but
and
that's that's very much like aligned with what you're saying, where it's like something from inside the earth is like kind of coming out and like doing something.
Yeah, yeah, just like nodal points of energy that.
Right. So that's what you believe, right? That like.
I don't think anybody on Earth has cracked the code or knows anything about it. Maybe, And so like all of our assumptions are probably just as wrong as how crazy as it sounds, but I think there's something to it.
Okay. Well, I went to a vortex. I didn't feel anything, but, that's just me. I've never flown through the Bermuda Triangle that I'm aware of. Maybe I have. No, I've never been over there. Thanks everyone for listening. Aaron, thank you so much for being here. Do you want to like plug into your socials or anything like that?
I don't have any socials. I'm on Bumble. Find me on Bumble. 42-year-old man in Los Angeles. Look for all of them. You'll find me.
All right, great. Willie, anything?
TikTok, Instagram, Likey, Robotic Willie, or Willie Bad Movies. Go follow me.
I'll just say thanks for listening. Please continue listening. And just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you. Oh, subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/real life sci-fi. We'll see you next time.